Countdown for blast off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire.
Welcome to another episode of the Forgot My Dice podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Edwards, and with me, of course, the happy little trees to my almighty mountains of mastery, Mr. Robert Lundgren. How you doing?
Hello, hello. I'm doing good. I'm doing good. It's been a month. It's been a month.
It has been. It's been much too long, and you're much too far away. I'm a little bit sad, but I'm just glad that we're getting back into the habit.
Yeah, my brain does that weird thing every time I move where, like, part of me doesn't realize how far I've moved, and I still go like, oh, I could just hop around the corner to this thing that's, oh yeah, it's several thousand miles away, isn't it? And then I get sad. And I thought maybe driving this entire distance would, like, I don't know, imprint that on my mind that it's, like, way far away.
But sadly, no.
But sadly, no. I've actually had that experience with you, no less. I was like, oh, I have the night off. I should just pop over to Jonathan's. He's just around. Oh, wait, huh?
If I leave now, I'll get there in a couple days.
It's only a 32-hour drive.
You should have called me. We could have done something online.
We should meet. We could meet halfway in Colorado.
Well, there's plenty to do in that state.
Yeah, there's plenty to do in this state, sir.
Sadly, not here. Anyway, moving right along. As always, we always want to start off our episode thanking our wonderful patrons over at Patreon. Without you, we wouldn't be able to do this show quite the way we do. Thank you for helping us keep the lights on. It's awesome. And in other news, we do have a contest coming up very, very soon. So do keep that in mind.
Yeah, it's the contest that Stephen Bonacor announced in episode 28.
Yes. Keep that in mind coming very soon. We're not 100% sure when, but it'll be in the next couple of episodes. We just want to have a chance to kind of get the motor running again because we've been off for a month. We're a little rusty.
And we have a Skype delay.
And we do have a Skype delay, which is taking a little bit of getting used to.
Yeah, so. Yeah. But you know what? I got gigabit, sir. Like, this is flying out of here.
Oh, yeah. I got gigabit, too.
Woo!
It's just a matter of distance.
Oddly, I didn't have gigabit at the old house, and I can tell you right now this connection's better.
Your old internet was terrible.
Yeah, it was.
It was really bad.
Yeah, it was.
Well, onward and upward, Robert, so much to talk about. Now, I know you've been moving, but it looks like you've had a chance to play a couple of
things. I edited quite a bit of TV out, actually, but yeah.
Well, let's get right to our off-the-shelf segment, the segment where we talk about all the fun stuff that we've had off the shelf. Mine's going to be bonkers stupid long, so I guess let's start with some back and forth, and let's get the little stuff out of the way. Let's start off with some video games.
Well, I got kind of burned out on Destiny 2 over here.
I can't imagine why.
Well, the new expansion's launching, and it's just one of those things. It's like my level's about to go up, or, you know, they're going from level cap is 20 to 25 and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, what's the point in doing anything right now? I'm just going to have to do more to level up in a couple weeks. So, and actually, that should happen tomorrow, which is nice. But I've been kind of like, I'm going to play some Overwatch again. And right when I decide to do that, the new hero, Moira, came out, and so I've been playing Evil Healer, which is a lot of fun.
Nice, nice.
And she's got a David Bowie skin. I don't know if you've seen that yet, but it's pretty funny.
No, I haven't. I've been way off of Overwatch. I have been playing a ton of Star Wars Battlefront 2, which is super fun, and I've also been playing a lot of DCS World, which is a combat flight sim.
Yeah, you talked about it not all that, well, I guess long ago, but not all that long ago. I think
everything feels long ago right now, Rob.
Yeah, I know. The long, long ago and the far, far away.
They released a new aircraft for it, the Harrier. So I have promptly tallied up about, by my rough calculations, $2.6 billion in crashed aircraft. So, you know, I've been busy. No, the Harrier is notoriously difficult to learn, and I can totally see why. It is an absolute beast in terms of learning, especially for the vertical takeoff and landing stuff. Once you get it going into flight mode, it flies really, really nicely. But in hover mode, there's a lot to learn, and it's a precarious thing.
Isn't that
it's
true to life?
It's quite the history in real life. It's like 17 or 18 pilots died in a two-year time span.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, they called it the Widowmaker for a long time. I'm not at all surprised. I had an incident last night. I was learning how to land on an aircraft carrier, And I accidentally hit pretty hard, and my engine caught fire. Well, the good news is I was able to extinguish the engine by putting the plane in the ocean. The bad news is that the plane was in the ocean and no longer flyable. So, you know, there's good and there's bad there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a good thing it's a sim, because in real life, I'm pretty sure that I would be in prison of some sort.
Or dead.
Or dead. Probably dead.
Probably dead.
But yeah, that's about it for video games for me. How about RPGs? I see you got some RPG loving in.
Yeah, right before we left, we finished up that game of Savage Rifts that we were running. God, I can't even remember the last time we talked about it. But yeah, we finished up the adventure we were playing and finished up our test run. And my daughter sat in for most of it. And she played a character concept not too far from real life. She played a seven-year-old, but this seven-year-old had crazy psychic powers. Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. I was surprised that she stayed interested in it as long as she did, and I think she just liked mommy and daddy acting goofy with her. But
nice.
And yeah, Savage Rifts is it is more balanced than normal Rifts, but yeah, it's still Rifts.
I hear it's still Rifts. Well, I've gotten some RPGing in too. My Wednesday group's been doing a good job of getting together at least every 2 weeks. And we've been playing some Star Wars RPG, and I've been DMing that, which has been a lot of fun.
Nice.
Or I guess I could say GM, because it's Galaxy Mastering.
Galaxy Mastering.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm going with that.
You're going with that? Nice.
Yeah, I heard it on a Star Wars RPG podcast, and I was like, yeah, you know what? I like that. I like that. I'm going to adopt that.
I'm the Galaxy Master.
But no, the group's really good. We've got... one character in particular is really kind of fun. It's a droid, but the droid's been left on for a very long time. And in Star Wars, when you leave a droid on, weird things start to happen. They get very, just like C-3PO, they get very personality ridden. And this one thinks that it is a Rodian big game hunter.
Trapped in now, a droid's body.
Because, well, yes, trapped in a droid's body. And what we've done is that droid actually has an alternate personality, which is more of a traditional droid personality. And when the player can actually join the session and play, the droid assumes the Rodian big game hunter personality. And then when he can't make it, we have another player that is playing him as the droid personality.
Oh,
and, you know,
gamers.
Of course, at any time, I can kick off a personality war between the two and really have some fun. So we've been having a good time in that game.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's been fun. It's been a good fun. How about some reading? I see you've got you've gotten your Delta Green love.
Yeah, the Handler's Guide came out, and I haven't read that as much as I should have, but I flipped through it, and it was everything I could have hoped for. I always forget how dark that game is. It is super duper dark. It is very nihilistic.
Every time we've talked about it, that's the part that's been particularly clear.
You know, I mean. I think I tweeted at Dennis Dittweiler, one of the writers, that it's a little dark, and yeah, he sort of said, yeah, well, you know, look at the world around you. I'm like, oh, wow, you're dark too. But yeah, no, it's good. There's a lot of just creepiness in there, and just it's a good update to the setting. They did a really good job of sort of capturing the spirit. You know, the 90s was all about they're going to get all your information in it, and they're going to watch you. And, you know, now in the future, it's like, yeah, they are
accomplished.
Yeah, they are totally watching you and they have all this information about you. But like, is there really anybody competent behind the wheel who like has all this stuff? Is that's kind of where the scariness is like, there's all this stuff and you get more stuff for the top men. But are the top men really that, you know, top? It's good times. I've been enjoying that book quite a bit.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I too have been doing some reading. I got my copy of, what's it called? I got my copy of Threadbare, the Stitchpunk RPG, in the mail from my Kickstarter that I joined up. And it is awesome. It is basically Toy Story, the RPG. So you get to play a toy and you're trying to exist within the universe, just kind of like the Toy Story toys do.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole game is just about surviving. And there's all kinds of different toys that you can be, including like a toy that's been slapped together from lots of different toys, just like in the original Toy Story.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's a really interesting book. The author, she did a fantastic job. Her name is Stephanie Bryant. And she did a fabulous job. I'm just really enjoying reading through this book, and I can't wait to try this game.
So is the game ultimately like Toy Story 3 and just about accepting death?
I don't know. I haven't gotten any of the pre-boxed adventures yet. I'm still kind of working through mechanics.
Ah, okay. Okay.
So I will let you know. But I suppose, you know, if you put me in charge of it, I can make it that.
Yeah, Toy Story 3, if you think about it, it's a really disturbing movie. You know,
yeah, Toy Story 3 was
like the scene in the end when they're going down into the incinerator, and instead of, like, you know, trying to climb back out or do anything, they all just kind of hold hands and accept death. And it's like, is that what this movie's all about? It's just accepting death. It's weird.
Well, I mean,
it's weird.
So I don't know if you've ever seen Babe, Pig in the City, but kids movies have a long history of being dark.
I have not seen Babe, Pig in the City, but children's literature has a long history of being dark as well. Have you ever read The Chocolate War, which is marketed towards children and is the most depressing book I've ever read?
Yeah, it is pretty depressing. But do you know who wrote and directed the two Babe movies?
Yes. And it's funny. I can't remember now.
Tiny little adorable gentleman known as George Miller, also known for his work on a family-friendly fare like Mad Max.
Yeah.
And Babe 2, Pig in the City, is dark. I mean, it's a great movie. It's a fantastic movie, but it's really dark.
Yeah. Well, you know, what happens when you tell the guy who made Mad Max 2 that, or Mad Max 3, that he can't make Mad Max 4? It's like, well, fine. I'll go make a movie about a pig instead. Ha! I'll show you.
And it'll talk, and it'll be dark.
And it will be dark. And you're sitting there the whole time. It's like, he did make another Mad Max movie. It's just starring a pig.
Yeah, but you know what?
Hmm.
Ultimately, it led him to Fury Road, which is just phenomenal. I actually, no joke, I just watched Fury Road the other day.
I haven't seen that since it was out in theaters.
Well, while we're on the subject of movies and TV, what other movies and TV have you seen?
Before we left Austin, the wife and I watched Stranger Things 2 and kind of shotgunning it while we packed.
No spoilers. I'm way behind.
I don't think it was as good as the first season, but I don't know how it could be. But it's like Stranger Thing 1... Or Stranger Things first season is to Alien, that Stranger Things 2 is to Aliens. I guess that's the best way to describe it. So it's good. It's just good in a different way.
Good in a different way. I get it.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be watching it very soon, and I will definitely chime in, and we can maybe do some more spoilers in the future. But it's still relatively new, so I don't want to dive in too much.
Well, there's the year spoiler thing. So it hasn't been a year yet, so you get your spoilers. Or you get your lack of spoilers.
Well, I have been watching a lot of Penny Dreadful. I'm almost done with that show. That show is so dark.
Yeah. A little nihilistic. And the weird thing about that show, I was trying to figure out, like, you know, when Frankenstein talks and when a lot of those characters talk, are they quoting their original books? Or are they quoting other people? Or I don't know.
No, they're quoting other people generally. Frankenstein quotes a lot of poets.
Yeah, I can see that.
I've heard him quote Yeats. I've heard him quote...
which, incidentally, is correct for the character, because he read a whole bunch of that stuff in the book. That's actually kind of how he learned how to talk, if I remember correctly, in that cave. It's like, I read philosophy and poetry in a cave. Ha ha.
Yeah, and that's exactly what they do with him in the show. I mean, that show is just phenomenal. It's really well done. It's really well acted. It's so nice to see Timothy Dalton in a role that isn't kind of what you've come to expect from him. I don't know. I'm having a great time with it.
You know what I love? I love that, what's her name? Eva Green is...
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So Eva Green is really, really good at chewing through really overly melodramatic dialogue and making it, like, work. And
she sells it.
And Timothy Dalton is also really, really good at that. And you put the two of them in a room and, like, you're watching the scene and you're just, like, so into it. It's so heavy. And then you think about what they're actually uttering later. And you're like,
it shouldn't work.
Yeah, it's like, this is the dumbest thing ever. But, like, they both of them, they just rock it. And not that the rest of the casting's bad, it is bad or anything. It's just those two in particular.
No,
like,
no,
you put them in a scene together and it's just magic. You're like, this is the crappiest dialogue, but it's amazing.
I am in no stretch a Josh Hartnett fan, but even he's really good in this show.
Yes, he is.
I can't recommend it highly enough. You should know. I think we need to put a warning on this. This is beyond the hard R. I mean, this is a dark show.
A little bit. That show is quite good. I need to watch the final season. I would say this, like, the show kind of decreases in quality as it goes on, but it's, then again, they only made 3 seasons, so who cares? It's not like the 3rd season's really bad. It's just, like, not as good as the first season. The first season was really magic. There was just something about it that was so messed up. And then the third season's...
It's all on Netflix.
I know. I need to finish it up. I got through... I did seasons 1 and 2, and it was just, like... I can't do anymore right now.
Yeah, it's not a show that you can
binge easily.
It's not a show that you can mainline like Stranger Things or something like that.
Yeah,
you really. I mean, not only from the perspective of letting the show marinate within you, but also letting your soul kind of patch itself from what you've just seen. You just need a week or so in between episodes, maybe 2 weeks.
Yeah,
don't marinate in this one because you're gonna come out a little charred.
Yeah, everybody in that show is just awful. Like, it's just so dark.
Well, moving along from the darkness of that's basically what I've been watching.
Speaking of dark, now I got this, buddy. I've been watching Ash vs. Evil Dead on Stars.
That's so awesome.
Show is amazing. It is
pretty good.
So good. It's like Buffy, but like everything is tuned up to 11. Like, you know, the comedy is just...
It's Buffy for adults.
Yeah.
It's Buffy for the people that grew up with Buffy and are now 20 years older.
Yeah. It's just... The comedy is much raunchier and more slapstick and just more all over the place. And then the gore explosions are just everywhere. But yeah. Oh. And Bruce Campbell just being a jerk, he it's like a fine wine, you know? You know, when he's a jerk on camera, you sort of swish it around the glass and stick your nose in it and take a smell and sort of breathe in Bruce Campbell being an ass. And then you take that little sip and you spit it out because, you know, you can't have too much, you know, but you got to appreciate the woody flavors and all the subtleties and the cask and all that. Yeah, that is Bruce Campbell. He's a genius. Yeah, he's fine wine.
He's a tall drink of sarcastic water.
That show's really good. And it's really fun how it's a fairly decent sequel to the movies. So anything else you've been watching or movies?
I'm going to be moving on to the last season of Longmire soon. That just dropped on Netflix. I've just got a couple other things that I need to get caught up on. But that's about it for me on TV. So let's move right along into... have you done any modeling?
Kind of. I played some Watch Machine. I found a store I like around here, which is really weird because walking in there... it doesn't look like my old shop in color scheme or anything, but like the vibe is my old shop. Really.
And let's face it, with an FLGS, vibe is important.
Yeah. It's just really weird walking in there because like it's like walking into a parallel universe or anything. And then, you know, I've talked to the guys who work there and they do a lot of the stuff that we did. And it's like, well, that's good to know. Either, you know, it's like we made these decisions and they worked okay for us. And I guess they're working for them. So I guess that's the right decision. But yeah, it's just... I don't know, but I like the shop, so and they have a War Machine night on Wednesdays, like we used to have. I went and played some Watch Machine and introduced myself, and hopefully I'll get a game in actually in 2 days, on Wednesday, because I'm going to go back.
Very nice.
So, but yeah, it was fun. It was fun watching a Mark III game, too, because it's interesting in the... I played a couple of games on Mark III when it first came out, and then watching it now, it's obviously been refined a little bit, which is nice. But yeah, they just kind of need to get through some of the errata passes on some of the factions, because you can kind of see which factions have gotten an errata pass and which ones haven't, if that makes sense. Because yeah, some factions are still kind of and weird and janky, and some factions are quite fun. I'm basically looking at you, Crix and Kador. Oh, and one of the guys was playing Grimkin. Those models are cool, and they're weird looking, and they're creepy as all get out, and they're big, too. The war beast, especially the big, thin guy who's like covered in skin with the knives, that's a really tall model. It's like, I mean, if he was scaled in real life, he'd be like 30, 40 feet tall. Like, he's bigger than anything I've ever seen before, but he's just tall and lanky. And yeah, it's a cool model, so... I forget what that one's called, but yeah, it was fun watching it. So, Watch Machine. I played some Watch Machine.
Awesome. Nothing in terms of miniatures for me, unfortunately, but I have gotten an absolute metric ton of board gaming in.
Okay, so we're going to eat up most of the Kickstarter segment right here.
Yeah, especially since Kickstarter's kind of quiet.
Yeah, so go.
Gosh.
Wait. Load up the gaming shotgun, cock it, because, you know, we got games to get through, so do the highlight reel. Should we get sports music? Should we get like sports montage music? Can we get the announcer? And then Jonathan played this and he did a good... I don't know. I don't watch enough sport montages to know how to do that right. Anyway, sorry. Go.
I really enjoy you trying so desperately to make a reference of something that you have absolutely no frame of reference for happen. I mean, you were digging deep there. You were digging deep.
I was
trying to set it up.
The closest thing I could come to was the old Chappelle Show skits on the history of scoring.
That was like watching me try and land the Harrier for 2 hours. It just ended in flames, and nobody was happy.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I'm totally kidding. I had a blast.
Oh, well, watching me struggle to make a reference, was that fun? Because I do it all for you.
Yeah, just about as much as me going smiling ridiculously as I'm trying to fly the thing and then exploding. I'm having so much. Oh, my.
Well, it's not real life, so it is fun. At a certain point, you just got to laugh at death.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Toy Story 3 it. I just held hands with the Harrier, and we all went down and
played. Until the claw from heaven came and got you. Ooh, the claw.
Well, before you left, we did have one last chance to game together, and we played some Bob Ross, The Art of Chill, but we're not going to talk about it much now, because, of course, we will be talking about it very soon, as it is our deep dive for today.
Yes, and you want to know what? I have played that since I got here.
So have I since you left, and it's continuing to be awesome.
Yes, yes, it's quite good, quite good. Anyway, go on.
All right, so in terms of what I've played, first of all, I have played a metric ton of Star Wars Destiny. I had an opportunity to go to BGGCon, and so I saw a lot of stuff there, but I also took my Destiny deck with me and played there, and it was just a ton of fun. Like, Destiny continues to be awesome, and they've released some errata recently and nerfed a couple of really overpowered cards, so I really feel like they've done a good job of rebalancing the game, and it's been super awesome.
You really can't get away from that. Like, if you're trying to make a game that has longevity, I've noticed that, like, a lot of people get all mad at Magic sometimes because they ban or restrict or whatever cards, but you just have to do that. There's no way around it. Like, an old Star Trek game by Decipher, the way they tried to fix things like that is they would just release cards that would just utterly wreck counters or certain combos that were busted. But then the problem is, you know, you have to have that card in your deck
at that point, right? You just keep escalating.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you have to have like a random card in your deck just in case somebody's going to play that combo on you. It just, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Sometimes you just have to just say, like, this card here, it doesn't say that anymore. Or even worse, this card here just doesn't exist anymore. It's gone. Just tear it up.
And that's exactly what FFG did. They went through and they literally changed the wording on a couple of cards, especially the Vibro Knife, which was completely broken before because you could basically bypass shields with your entire damage regiment. So it made an entire section of the game basically irrelevant.
Hey, Fantasy Flight. This is Star Wars, not Dune. You don't use daggers to get through shields. Wrong genre.
No, but they did a really good job. The changes that they made, I totally agree with. I think they chose them wisely, and I think it's better for the game, and it makes it more competitive, which is exactly what you want. I also had a chance to play some more Karmica, which I know we've talked about on the show before.
Yes.
It continues to be super fun. When I was at BGGCon, I picked up a new game called Arena of the Gods. And this is from Aiello, and it's really cool. It's a little miniatures combat game, but instead of miniatures, you have cardboard standees for your guys. It's played on a little hex board, and there's actually 3D scenery that you put together out of cardboard, and you put it down on the board to form up different shapes for the arena. And it's basically an arena combat game, but there's a twist on the whole thing. You have a screen, and your health is measured in cubes, which you hide behind the screen. And when you're first starting the game, you start out with no equipment, and the first phase of the game is everybody picks a weapon, a shield, a mount, and a magic spell. And the way you pick them is you shuffle the deck of those things, deal out one for every player, and then everybody bids a part of their life in a hidden auction, and whoever bids the most life gets to pick the first weapon, and then you go down from there. So the question is, do you bluff and not, start the game with maximum life, or do you spend some of your life to get better weaponry? It's a really interesting conundrum, and it's very, very quick. You can play it in under 30 minutes. It's super fun, and it's a really good, light, strategic combat game.
Yeah, I saw that at a game store around here. It looked interesting.
Then I had a chance to play a new game recently called Custom Heroes, and this is kind of interesting. It's a trick-taking game, but all the cards come and they ship with sleeves, and that's important because it works into the game, because it also ships with a little cloth bag full of clear plastic cards with text effects written on them. And what you do is you start out with your basic hand of 10 cards, and you're trying to basically put the same card or a higher card than the previous person, and you go around trying to get rid of all your cards, and whoever gets rid of all their cards first wins that round and wins a couple of points, some money that you can spend during the game, and also comes with a couple of these clear cards, which can act as modifiers. And then you start to bake those into the cards by sliding them into the sleeve and basically changing the card altogether. Make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. It's like Gloom, almost.
Yes, yes. It's very much like Gloom. But what it does is sometimes they come with no cost at all, and those could be just basic modifiers to your value to make the value higher or lower. But also, sometimes they will have a modifier on them, and that modifier generally comes with an expense. So that money that you're winning at the end of rounds is important because it lets you fire off these special abilities, which help to sometimes get rid of cards faster, and sometimes they help you pile cards onto your opponents. It's interesting. It was a lot of fun. And by the end, as all the cards start to get polluted with these modifiers, it gets really ridiculous really quick.
That sounds fun. Tell me about Shark Attack. That's the only.
That's next on my list.
Yeah.
So a couple weeks ago, I had a chance to play Shark Island, which is a new game from Upper Deck, and this game's absolutely ridiculous. It's basically Jaws the board game.
Yeah, we talked about it an episode or two ago. I want to say Upper Deck made it. It was part of the thing that Upper Deck previewed at a con or something that they had. Oh, it was at Gen Con. Yeah, we were just kind of in love with the art style. Like, we didn't even know what the game was about, yeah. But we're like,
no, the art is awesome, and the art's one of the best things about it. But it is also a really, really fun game. So it's up to five players, and one person plays the shark, and everybody else plays shark hunters. And what you're doing is you are basically, as the shark, you're trying to collect extra tokens. They basically represent a shark sighting, and you're trying to get as many of these as possible every round, because then you pollute the water with false sightings. There's only one actual shark in all of these tokens. The more of these things that you put down on the different locations, the harder it is for the hunters to find you every round. Make sense?
Makes sense.
And here's the best part. The shark has an agenda.
Wait, what?
Exactly. One of the first things that you do at the beginning of the game is the shark chooses which agenda it's trying to work towards. That could be getting the mayor fired, or it could be getting all the beaches closed, etc. So there's lots of different, or there's only a couple different agendas that the shark can choose from, and then that's what the shark player will be trying to work towards in the game. And then the hunters, on the other hand, they don't really have an agenda. They're just trying to find the shark and prevent it from getting its work done.
So wait, you can actually get all the beaches closed? Like, the mayor isn't the mayor from Jaws?
One of the agendas is to get the beaches closed. Another agenda is to get the mayor fired, which I thought was hysterical, given Jaws. And, yeah, it's just, I don't know, it's super fun. It's a relatively light, hidden game, and there's a lot to like about it, and the art style is absolutely phenomenal. I love the art in that game.
Yeah, I was looking at all the pictures. It was kind of fun because you were posting them on our feed, and I was like, ooh, this is what the listeners must feel like when they see our feed, because I'm seeing all this stuff, and it's cool. But yeah, can't say enough about that art. I love it.
Yeah, no, it's really, really good. And then I played a little economic game called Mo Money. And it's Mo, M-O-W, and the whole game, it's a big economic game around owning your own landscaping service. And it's kind of hysterical because you start out with this little push mower, the sod stripper, I think it's called. And then you can upgrade to a riding mower, and then you can upgrade to like a super riding mower. And basically there's a bunch of contracts that you can bid on, and the person with the lowest bid on those contracts. And it's just, it's kind of fun. It's just a fun, ridiculous game. And it's from an economic standpoint, the economic engine in the game is really fun. It works really, really well. And then I played a fun dexterity game called Warlords. And this has a big old wooden castle. And in the middle of it is this giant field. And there's some pegs in the middle of the field. And you're flicking dice into this battlefield. And they represent your units. And you are trying to flick your dice into the openings at the base of the other player's rampart. And also at BGGCon, I saw a new game coming out next year called Dragon's Gate College. So imagine, if you will, you know, a game where you play the owner of a school for wizards, and you have access to students, and you have access to professors, and you're trying to win victory points by using the students and the professors as workers that you put in this worker placement game. And you are trying to basically build an engine that gets you points, and those points translate to victory at the end. So then I had a chance to try both Clank games, which was cool. I tried Clank and Clank in Space. And these are deck-building games, and you actually have this big, giant environment that you are roaming around. You're trying to get as deep into the dungeon as possible in both games, because that's where the good loot is. But as you pick things up, you start to generate what's called Clank, which is you take cubes that you have and move them into a bag and put them in that bag. And that bag represents, in the case of the original Clank, a dragon that's coming to attack you. And so every round that you make Clank, at the end of the round, if the dragon gets a chance to attack, you reach into that bag and whoever's cube comes out is the one that takes the damage. Yeah, it's an interesting twist on deck building. It's fun. And Clank in Space adds a couple more things to it that the original Clank didn't have. I can't say I liked one more than the other. I would generally tend more towards the science fiction theme, but I thought that in this particular case, it worked a little better as a fantasy game. So I had a lot of fun with both of them, though. I can't speak highly enough about both of them. They're super fun.
What's it called again?
Clank and Clank in Space.
Wait, what's that second one again?
Clank
in Space.
There you go. You were saying it wrong. Okay, I understand you now.
And then I had a chance to also play a game called Queen Domino, which is the sequel to King Domino. And essentially, it's King Domino with some additional gameplay to make it a little deeper.
Nice.
And you're just generating a little kingdom using two-sided tiles, just like dominoes. And you are trying to build your little 5x5 kingdom and create parcels of land that connect. And then there was a really cool prototype I played called Gravity Warfare, and this was neat. It is a platform that's suspended at the top of a, basically what amounts to a finger.
Mm-hmm.
And then this platform is balanced very precariously. And you put these weighted elements onto the platform, and then it starts to gyrate wildly. Hence the gravity warfare.
That sounds awesome. I'm looking it up on Google.
Yeah, it's super fun. A super, super fun dexterity game. I had a lot of fun with it.
Oh, wow. That looks rad.
When you get a chance, go watch one of the videos of the way that the action that this platform gets. It's amazing how animated it is. Well, then I had a chance to play another game called Panic Mansion, and this one's super cool. So basically, everybody gets a box with 8 compartments in it, and in between these compartments are doors, and this represents the different rooms of a mansion, right?
Mm-hmm.
So every single room has a different carpet/wallpaper pattern in it, and you have a bunch of different meeples that are tossed in there. Now, it starts off that it's an adventurer, 3 gold treasure chests, which are in the shape of cubes, and then 2 ghosts. And there's a deck of cards that has these symbols on it, and you reveal a card, and the card shows you what color the room is, and also what needs to be in that room. And then you shake very gently and rotate the box so that you're maneuvering it so that all the treasure meeples and the adventure meeple are in the room that's been dealt, but the other elements are out. And then every time that you get one right, and you are the first one to accomplish that, you get something else tossed in your box, like a big giant eyeball, or a spider, or a snake. And these things make it harder to separate everything out using the dexterity. And it's just, it's crazy fun, it's super quick, and it's really just hectic. It's a super fun, hectic game. All right, and then rounding out the games, I had a chance to play a new game called The Great Dinosaur Rush, which was really fun. Everybody plays paleontologists, and it's a worker placement game. And you put the workers out on the board, and you move them around. And at the beginning of the round, whatever space that you're on, the workers dig in and get a bunch of different wooden, the little wooden bits out in different colors. But what those represent are the bones of a dinosaur. And then behind the screen, after you have all these parts, you actually construct a dinosaur of your choosing. You're trying to match cards to get bonus points out of this dinosaur. And you're also trying to do things like have the longest neck and have the longest arms and legs to get bonus points every round. And there's a tiny economy in it. One of the actions that you can do is to move markers up and down an economy scale on the board. And those make certain boosts worth more points. And it's just a lot of back and forth, and it's super easy and fun to play. And at the end of it, you have this giant dinosaur skeleton, which is awesome.
Nice.
And then I had a chance to play Islebound from Ryan Lockett. Now, if you've been listening to the show for a while, you'll know that I'm a big Ryan Lockett fan. I play all of his games, and Islebound did not disappoint. Super, super fun. It's a worker placement game. Where you actually also have a sailboat that's cruising around, and that sailboat lets you visit different islands, and those islands have different functions and different, and you're basically doing a combination of worker placement and engine building to score points.
Man, gamer regrets. I wanted to play one of those games with you before I left, and I didn't get a chance.
That's just a reason for you to come visit.
Sweet.
And that rounds out my ridiculous off the shelf. So, I'm sorry, it was a lot to play, but I did go to a con, so I got a lot more play than normal in, and it has been a month since we talked.
Well,
so I've been
speaking of which, you went to a con, so how was Board Game Geek Con?
It was really chill, it was super mellow. It's a players' convention. Everybody's playing and having a good time, and there's lots of tables. We never had a problem finding a table. The library is phenomenal. I mean, you have access to, it feels like, almost every board game ever made. That's how it feels when you're there. Obviously it's not, but never had a problem getting a title to play. And it was just, it was a lot of fun. I couldn't have asked for a better crowd. It was super, super fun and engaging.
That's cool. And is it in Dallas every year, or is it, does it move around?
I believe so. Yeah.
Okay. Yet another thing I didn't do, but darn it, I'm going to get the H.P. Lovecraft film thing off my bucket list next year.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, because that's out here in Portland and sounds awesome.
Well, I think that's it. Yeah, I think we've wrapped off the show.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that means it's time for our A Year in the Life segment, where we look at what we deep dove a year ago, and we have 365 whole seconds to talk about it. And if we want to go longer, well, that means we need to get it off the shelf and play it. Yeah. So what did we have a year ago? So it's interesting because we're in a weird conundrum now. We're not quite a year. It's a little more than a year because we took the...
Yeah. So... in FMD episode 5, The Call of Bling, we talked about how to have a Halloween game night, which means there's nothing to talk about because it's way after Halloween, so moving on. FMD episode 6, Pay No Attention to These Dice Being Rolled, where we had guest Mike Hall in talking about his game that was on Kickstarter at the time, This Defiant Earth. And this should be easy. It's not out yet, so we haven't been able to play it.
Well, we still have access to the beta that we played, and I've actually I have run a game with some other friends, just kind of giving the beta rules a go. And since I've got his other RPG that we talked about, Urban Nights, you know, I've got a good basis. But I am definitely excited about this book coming out. And he actually just put out a update recently talking about how it should be out very, very soon. So this is going to be something we can revisit in a little bit.
Yeah. I plan on it. I'm really looking forward to... I talked about it in the Urban Nights thing, but his chapter in Urban Nights about the vibe of the 70s was just on point. And I am very, very curious about this. And the funny part is I've seen quite a few like retro 50s sci-fi games pop up recently on like DriveThruRPG and something. So like Mike was tapped into something before others were, I think. I can't wait to read it. It sounds like fun. So that's it, but we caught up on 2 episodes, so...
Well, there you go.
We might have to do that in the future, which is good, because we got our year review and whatnot coming up, so those will be easy to kind of blow through, because how can we do the year in review again, except to do it for the next... Anyway, I think that's it.
Well, next up is our Wisdom of Crowds segment, where we're going to be covering pretty exclusively just news this time around, but that will be after a few... messages from our sponsors.
We are going to check in with an old friend while we're there, though, because that Kickstarter went on long enough that it's still going right now that we talk. Well, anyway, we'll get there.
We'll be right back.
Do you have a tabletop, board game, miniature game, or RPG that you're going to release for retail?
Or do you have an upcoming tabletop Kickstarter that you're about to launch?
We would love to interview you for a future episode of the Forgot My Dice podcast.
Send us an email to fmdpodcast2016@gmail.com to schedule an interview. And now it's time for the Wisdom of Crowds, our bi-weekly tabletop news and Kickstarter segment. Well, Robert, let's go ahead and get started here with some tabletop news. First up is something that's definitely got my attention, Betrayal at the House on the Hill, Legacy.
I think this has both our attention, because Betrayal at the House on the Hill is not like...
It's a fun game.
It's not deep. It's not
a particularly balanced game.
No.
But it's a fun game.
It's a fun game. Yeah, I love it. It's a good gateway game, because all you got to do is find someone who likes horror movies and, you know, you can get them to play this game. And now they're going to have a Legacy Edition, which means it is going to be a deep, stupid game, and it's going to be the horror movie game, and that is awesome.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. I can think of a few other franchises that I want to see as a Legacy game more.
You know, it didn't even occur to me to make this a Legacy game, but it... fits, you know, like the house changing over time and growing, and like it's this living, breathing, awful thing. Yeah, it's perfect.
I'm excited. And it's what,
October of 2018, and that's pretty much all we know about it. They just sort of said it exists.
I can think of few things I would rather do than play a game like this on Halloween. That's going to be great.
Well, you're going to have to play like, what, 13 games? I think they said it's going to be a number of chapters, so...
That's fine. Done. Sold. Take my money.
Yeah.
Well, moving right along, some Privateer Press news. It looks like we are getting a new subline out of Privateer Press. It's Black Anchor Heavy Industries.
Yeah, so basically think of this as, if you play Games Workshop games, this is their Forge World line. It's basically a specialty resin line of models that are just a little too obscure to really be reasonable to sell at retail. And the first model up is the Dracodile, which is the Minions Colossal. I think the pre-ordering on that just closed, but it'll be available for general purchase on December 15th. So after this hits. Yeah. A little bit after this hits, you should be able to just buy it off the website. And you can buy it after the pre-order's over. It's just if you buy it during the pre-order, you get a fun shirt for the Dracodile. And then today they announced that the Troll Northkin Hooch Hauler is going to be available for pre-order soon. And if you pre-order that, you will get a Black Industries beer cozy, which is appropriate, I think, because keep your beer cozy. Am I right?
You are right. You always want to keep that beer cozy.
Yeah.
Well, let's gallop right on over to the next piece of news, something that I know you're excited about.
What? This is amazing. This is amazing.
Not the word I would have chosen.
Yeah, no, it is. It's amazing. So River Horse, makers of the Tales of Equestria role-playing game, have announced the pre-order for the My Little Pony Friendship is Magic movie tie-in game, or tie-in book, which is awesome because it has a whole bunch of extra stuff for your My Little Pony RPG. And such things include new non-pony characters, including nimble roguish cats, swashbuckling parrots that I'm sure have striking plumage, brave and honorable hippogriffs, and shrewd and intelligent lizard folk, with a new adventure based on the movie, new locations based on the same, and so much more. And, you know,
hey, you know what? I think anything that gets people gaming is a good thing. And if this is what they're into, then that's awesome.
I keep meaning to buy this game. I really need to read through it because I think it's an RPG focused at kids, and it, you know, that's one of my things. Like anything to get.
No,
then again, my daughter's playing Savage.
Products like that on the shelf. I think that it focusing RPGs at kids is awesome because it helps them build imagination and it gets them into our awesome hobby.
Well, and you know, it's most role playing games aren't easy to learn. You know, you do have to have some reading comprehension and some maths. And, you know, I mean, we had Eowyn playing Savage Rifts, and she was kind of getting it. Like, you know, it's like, roll these two dice. Did you roll the highest thing on there? You know, then roll it again and add it up. And she was like counting on her fingers and stuff and kind of holding up the game a little bit, but it was cute. So we just sort of let it happen. But yeah,
it's good practice.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was fun. And she was getting it. Like I said, in the last segment, she was having a really good time. So I'm like, maybe I should bust out the D&D. I mean, I might have to tell her what her stuff does. I guess we'll do the classic thing and make your kid brother play the fighter. You know, I mean, it just rolling numbers and, you know, adding numbers to numbers, it's probably a good thing. So, and she's getting pretty good at sounding out words, so that would help too. So I don't know.
Well, and I don't think any time that you're having kids practice with their imagination, it can be a bad thing. I think that's always a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. River Horse announces Tales from Equestria, the official movie source book.
Well, let's move over to FFG. And FFG is quite interested in bringing stuff into a different medium. And they've started out with the Legends of Alliance app for Star Wars Imperial Assault. This is something they've been talking about since, what, Gen Con last year, right?
Yeah, yeah. I first got wind of it when Mansions of Madness 2 hit with a resounding awesome, and everybody said the app made the experience better, and then they released the Descent version pretty soon after that, right? Or was Descent first?
Yeah, and guess what I have sitting on my iPad right now?
What, this app that does the same thing for Imperial Assault?
Yes, indeedy.
So, yeah.
And I'll let you know how it is, because that's my big plan this week.
So yeah, this is the app that makes the... It takes away the role of the... What do they call it in Imperial Assault? The Empire character, right? They have a fun name?
Empire.
Just the Empire guy?
I don't know. Not off the top of my head, at least.
Empire dude. Okay, so it takes away the role of the Empire dude.
Because in the Descent one, it's the Overlord.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. So it means... But basically, it means that you're... Everybody is playing the Rebel Alliance, and everybody's playing against the game itself because the game is automated to an extent. And hopefully they do the same thing that they did for Mansions of Madness, which is they don't, you know, make you play the game on the app. It actually requires you to do stuff on the board, and you just sort of like let the app know what happened. Well, so
yeah, the Descent one does a really good job of that, and as does Mansions of Madness. And I it's interesting. I was reading about it, and they want this to exist alongside the game modes that are in the box. So it does not borrow content from the box at all. It just borrows the pieces, and then you use them appropriately with the app.
Yeah, and that's perfect. Like, I've seen a lot of games get that mix wrong, but yeah, that's what you do. You make sure that the actual, you know, stuff that you spent money on, the physical stuff, you actually need to use it. It's pretty easy. So yeah, it's pretty cool. Tell us how it is. I'm sure you'll let us know in episode 31.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. Because I've always had fun with those games. They're so good.
Yeah. And then next up is this one caught my eye because reading the press release on it, Fantasy Flight is launching Fantasy Flight Interactive. And they are not calling themselves they're calling themselves a video game studio. And what they take very special care to say in this press release is they are making video games based off of their properties. And it doesn't say we're bringing like the board game experience to Steam or whatever. They're saying they want to make a game set in like the Arkham universe or something like that. And it sounds like they're not necessarily going to, you know, just translate their board games into, you know, to play on your tablet. Like, this might be new stuff entirely. You know what I mean? Like, that's the vibe I got out of it. I don't know about you.
Either way, it doesn't matter to me. I'm going to be excited because I love their worlds, too. Their world building is great.
Well, and the guy that they hired is I'm gonna butcher this. Tim Garriston. Anyway, but he was the former studio director of Irrational Games and Human Heads and the CEO of Human Head Studios, and he did like, you know, some of the BioShock games and Rune. So Rune was like an action RPG, and he did the original Prey, it looks like, which was also kind of an action RPG. So
that was a fun one.
Yeah. So I mean, we might be looking at, you know, like, can you imagine like the Android universe and having, you know, maybe like, I don't know, an action RPG or something set in the, you know, the cyberpunk dystopian future. Down. Yeah.
I'd be all over something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Or maybe even like a more like a role playing game set in the Runebound universe or, you know, the Descent universe basically. Like, yeah, no, or just maybe just kind of a straight up old, like, Eye of the Beholder style, just dungeon crawler set in the Descent universe. I mean, yeah.
I would buy every single one of the games that you just described.
Well, yeah, I don't know. We'll see how it shakes out. But the wording on this press release was very specific because it did not sound like they were just, you know, it's like, oh, we're just going to make our board games into video games. It sounds like, no, we want to make new experiences based off of our IP and we want to do it in-house and make all the money. I love me the computer RPG. So hopefully it gets on PlayStation and hopefully it's a cool RPG. But hopefully it's not Android because I don't know if it could beat Cyberpunk 2077, which is coming out pretty soon, too.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward
to it. But Descent. Do Descent. And or L5R. Like, a hardcore L5R RPG would be fun, especially if combat was just messed up and you could just die. Like, you had to be, like, really on point, you know? Because that's the appeal of L5R. You gotta maybe not do combat because you could just die. Yeah, well, whatever.
Well, Robert, now it's time to go check in on an old friend. A friend from before the hiatus.
Before the move. Back in the long ago and the far, far away. Yeah.
Yes, we are, of course, talking about the Necronom Nom Nom. Nom Nom Nom. Yeah, I got that right. Got the Necronom Nom Nom.
So by the time this hits the air, this will be over. It has 4 days to go. But, you know.
But it's funded.
But it's funded, yeah. So we said last time it's going on long enough that we'll check back in with it. Well, here we are, keeping our word, setting up that expectation and hitting it out of the park. Oh, yeah. Wow, it hit $68,000. I know they got an article in like the Sci-Fi Wire or something, which probably helped, I would guess. But yeah, they hit all their stretch goals, and they're being smart. They're not just making up more, because sometimes you get buried in stretch goals, and then your thing never comes out ever.
It's super cool. It's a great idea. I think it's fun. I'm glad to see it getting made.
Yeah, but 60-day Kickstarter. We took almost a month off. I moved across 4 states and it's still going.
Yeah, in 4 days we will see the final results of the Necronom Nom Nom.
Nom 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 Nom. Yeah. Oh, it looks great. I love it. I love that cover.
No, I'm down.
I love that cover. See
people on the internet start to post pictures of the rest of it.
There we go. Man, we should back this and make like a YouTube series, you know, just like a new recipe from...
And on this week's Necronom Nom, I brought in this grass-raised, fully organic Shoggoth. We're going to be preparing it today with a lovely Chianti reduction and a little bit of liver and some fava beans.
And for...
So let's go ahead and get started.
And for dessert, we're going to make some custard out of space. Now, the swirling colors in this custard may drive you to madness and eventual death by vampiric draining of your life force, but I think the taste will be worth it.
They won't drive you to starvation.
No.
Because they're going to fill that tummy.
The cake in yellow. Nice. Oh, this is so good. I love this Kickstarter.
I'm down. I'm totally down.
This is amazing. All right.
Well, that brings us to the end of our extremely short Wisdom of Crowd section.
Yeah.
Lots of good news. Not really anything to talk about in terms of Kickstarters.
There were a lot of good Kickstarters in that month we took off.
Oh, no, there's been a lot of fantastic Kickstarters. Unfortunately, they all happened while we were gone.
Yeah, yeah. I wish I could talk about Changeling and Dragon Kings and, yeah.
You can, when they come out.
Well, I guess. But it'll be sad. I wish I could have, like, thrown the FMD seal of approval on them, I guess. I can kind of hear it.
Well, we will be back with our deep dive segment right after a short message from our sponsors. We'll see you in just a moment. We love getting feedback, so please let us know how we're doing by doing one of the following.
You can email us at fmdpodcast2016@gmail.com.
You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/forgotmydice. We post all our articles there, so feel free to comment, or you can message us directly via the Facebook Messenger.
We also have Facebook comments enabled for all our posts at ForgotMyDice.com.
You can also message us or tweet us on the Twitter. Find us at ForgotMyDice.
You can join us on the Freebooter Network message boards. Find your way there by going to FreebootersNetwork.com and click on the Freebooters forum.
If you like the show, the best way for more people to find out about us is to give the Freebooters Network a review on iTunes.
Lastly, for those of you listening from the depths of interstellar space, make sure you turn your controls 18 degrees to the left and flip the intensifier disc on and off again.
Interstellar space?
Yeah, they listen to podcasts on interocitors.
And welcome back. It is now time for our deep dive. And on today's deep dive, we are covering what I never in 1,000 years would have guessed would have been not only something we covered extensively on the show, which we have, but something that I think it's safe to say both of us have fallen in love with, yeah?
Yeah.
We are, of course, talking about our old friend Bob Ross, The Art of Chill. We've given this game so much coverage. And you know what? What a joy that when it came out, it not only did it live up to the expectations of that coverage, but it actually shattered every expectation I had and ended up becoming one of my favorite games of 2017.
I know.
It is.
Who would have thought?
No,
who would have thought?
Not in a million years. But here we are. So let's talk about Bob Ross, The Art of Chill game.
Here we go. It's been a while since I've done one of these.
Bob Ross voice. You're going to celebrate the joy of painting in this game. Go, Robert.
Okay. We are going to celebrate the joy of painting in this game of strategy and serendipity. Earn quote-unquote chill points by painting landscape features like happy little trees and almighty mountains using colors and brushes from your hand of cards. Keep your eye on what other players are doing and be strategic about the sequence in which you complete features. If another player beats you to the brush, you may want to wash your palette and shift your painting plan.
Do you or instead, you're just going to beat the devil out of it?
There's no mistakes. There's just happy accidents. Or instead, hone your artistic technique so you can reap higher rewards on later turns, all the while Bob sets the painting pace as he advances across the easel, offering sage encouragement and bonus opportunities for even more chill. Oh, yes, it's so good.
Yeah, it really is, though, isn't it? Isn't it just so good?
It's so good. And the perfect compliment for any game is, you know, Bob Ross's YouTube channel or, you know, Netflix has several of his episodes. Just throw one on.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Listen to the man while you play. Just it helps. I don't know why.
We put the iPad on with a Bob Ross episode while we played last time. And man, if that wasn't just the best.
Yeah. Just beat the devil out of it.
So let's talk about how it plays. there's a couple things. So number one, you've got this great plastic easel, and on the easel is a Bob Ross painting. And
officially licensed, too. Like, it's a for really real Bob Ross painting.
For real Bob Ross painting.
Which is awesome.
And what you're basically doing is you are painting that, and at the same time, a little AI Bob Ross is painting it as well. And he moves across the bottom of the easel, and sometimes...
With by far the best feature... Of
yeah,
the
a
game,
Ross
which is
the, it's a Bob Ross meeple, and it's meeple. Beautiful, and it makes me happy, and that's all I want to talk about.
And it's colored in titanium white, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure. Now, eventually, Bob's going to hit the end of that track, and when he hits the end of that track, that is actually going to take that painting down, and Bob's going to start over on a new painting, stopping your ability to score on that particular painting. Now, you're probably wondering how it is that you score. You score by playing paints from your hand to your palette, and the paints are actually little cards that you pick up during the game, and you need specific combinations of cards, so it's kind of a set collection game. Because those specific combinations are going to let you paint features on the painting. And the first person to get those features gets the most points. And the next couple of people who get those features get points. And eventually you get to a point where that's not no longer worth points. Although that rarely happens. We rarely saw it not
matter. Well, it's always worth points because you get points equal to the number of paints that you use to paint the feature regardless.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
And then you get bonus points if you beat Bob to it. So typically the hardest thing to paint, the thing that requires four colors, if you paint that before Bob, you get 2 points. And then the next one down is 1 point. And then after that, it's nothing. And then if you're the first player to paint that, you also get bonus points. The first person gets 2 extra bonus points. The second person gets 1. And then after that, it's nothing. And also, if a player manages to paint all of the features even before Bob, that painting is over and you move on to the next one. And then to paint a feature, you have to have all the colors on your easel, and then every paint color also has a brush associated with it. So then you have to play a brush from your hand that also matches the feature. So you might have something that, you know, requires, you know, titanium white and I can't think of any of his other colors. Cerulean, I don't even know what his other colors are. But anyway, you might have something that requires like white and yellow, and then it'll say, yeah, and you also need the fan brush. So you have white and yellow on your easel, you play your fan brush from your hand, boom, you complete that feature, and you're done.
Yep, and beyond that, it's just simple points. That's all you're doing.
It's really simple. Like, I love the game. Yeah, oh, well,
three
and
actions,
one
three
more
actions for the whole game.
And one more thing, you can get technique cards. And technique cards are, you have to discard 2 things that are the same. So if you're trying to go for the 2-inch brush card, you have to just discard two 2-inch brushes from your hand. It's pretty easy. And then you pick up that feature card or that technique card. And every time you use that technique, so if you complete a painting feature that uses the brush that you have, you just get an extra bonus point. And then you immediately score 2 points for just picking one up. And that just shows your mastery of a brush or a color or whatever. And those really factor into the game. Like, quite well, because, you know, you can... I won the game last time because I got, like, something absurd, like 11 points because I managed to hit, like, a brush and 3 colors and blah, blah, blah. Like, it was nuts. So, you know, those are worth picking up because 2 points is 2 points, too. So, it's...
Yeah,
I don't know.
Talking about a game where you're scoring hundreds and hundreds of points. This is a very tight game.
Yeah, yeah. I think... Where does the easel run out at? Like, 40, I want to say?
Yeah, I think so.
I should have brought my copy up. It's downstairs. Very lazy of me.
How dare
Hold
you?
On. How dare you? You don't even have it. Shut up, yo. It's 30. So yeah, the game caps out at 30 points. So it's really simple, and you know it plays fast. You know, you could get a game in like 30 minutes. It's really easy to re-rack.
Yeah,
and
a game with a full amount of players too, no less.
Your turn consists of, you have 3 actions, but the very first thing you do is you roll the Bob dice. Tell us about the Bob dice, Jonathan.
Well, the Bob die is a die that has Bob on a couple different sides of it, and if Bob pops up, he moves forward on the easel track. That's how he makes his march.
Not necessarily, because you have to draw a Bob card, and some of the Bob cards says Bob.
That's true.
Bob because doesn't move.
The Bob die is essentially telling you that you need to draw the Bob card, at which time Bob may or may not move, depending on how
right.
Bob feels. But
and then Bob also has
gives advice.
That's true. Yeah, and that's the best part too.
All kinds of Bob Ross quotes on these things.
They're
amazing. All,
and you should read them out loud. Just read them out loud every time you get them. It's
Bob
awesome.
Ross voice.
Yeah, totally. In your best Bob Ross voice. And then the cards also have modifiers. So if he doesn't move, he doesn't move. But sometimes it'll say, you know, if you score a feature with blue this turn, you get an extra point, or everybody can draw a card or whatever. So yeah, 3 of the sides are Bob. 1 side has a art easel on it, or a painting easel, and that is you may play 1 paint from your hand to your palette. Very simple. There's a card with a plus that just gives you an extra action, so you get 4 actions that turn instead of 3. And then, Then there's the card. There's a card with a plus, and that means you can draw an art supplies card off the top of the deck. And then there's a hand, and that means you get an extra action. So instead of getting 3 actions that turn, you get 4. And so, yeah, you roll the die. You got a 50-50 shot of getting a Bob, and then, you know, a 1 in 6 shot of, one in six shot of getting the other three things. And then you take your three turns, and your actions are you can draw an art supplies card. Now, the art supplies card is kind of like Dominion or some deck builders. There's four cards out face up, and then you can also top deck in this game.
Yeah, it's all so you can take. Store.
Yeah. So you can take a color or a brush or, you know, because they're on the same card, or you can just, you know, you can let Bob decide what you get and just top deck if you can't think of anything else better to do. You can apply one color to your palette. And your palette can have up to 6 cards on it, and they're in 2 columns of 3. So, and those are important because if, say, you need 4 colors, you need blue, yellow, green, and white, and white is mixed with red on your palette because it's on the side B or whatever of your palette, it is mixed with red, and you cannot use that. So you cannot use those colors, which kind of sucks if that happens to you if you're not paying attention. Which happened to me in my first game, but I did not make that mistake again. But something you just got to kind of keep track of. You can wash your palette, which means you wash everything from one of your palette sides, either A or B. You can sweep the art supplies store and put out 4 new cards. You can, you know, discard 2 cards and get a technique card, like we said, or you can discard a brush from your hand and paint a feature. And that's it. It's pretty easy.
I mean, let's face it, the rule book is 7 pages long, and that's all it needs to be because it's phenomenal. It's a very slick and efficient game. There's not a ton going on, so it's super easy to learn, but that is not to say at all that there is no strategy in this game, because this game is hugely strategic.
So, and this is the best part. I don't have to ask you how that rule book was because I read it on my own because I taught myself this game and you taught yourself this game. We didn't teach each other at all.
Yeah, which it totally worked because it's that easy to learn.
Yeah. No, like you said, the rule book is 7 pages. The first page is just a cool picture of Bob painting himself, actually, it looks like, which is weird. Oh, no, it's somebody filming Bob painting something. And you've got like kind of a quick reference on the last page and a little blurb about Bob. But yeah, the game itself is just the rule book works. I mean, there's no index, but then
the game works. I mean, that's the beauty of it, right? I mean, it's an efficient game. It's a fun game. It's a great little package. It's got fantastic production design. And I can't find a fault with this game. It's a lovely experience that completely took me by surprise.
Yeah. The only thing, I was playing with somebody who watched a lot of Bob Ross, and he said that there's an orange color, and he said Bob never uses a cadmium orange color. The closest he gets is there's a color called Indian Yellow, which is kind of orangish on his web store. And he's like, that's the one thing that's wrong with it. It's just Bob doesn't use an orange. If he makes an orange, he just mixes red and yellow. And I'm like, wow, you watch way too much Bob Ross.
Yeah, no kidding.
But still, like that, like the, you know, my buddy who's like a super nitpicker, that was the one thing he can nitpick. It's like Bob doesn't use an orange. He uses, you know, yellow ochre and cadmium yellow. He doesn't use orange.
Now, what's amazing about this game, and this is something that I firmly believe is one of the best features of it, is we've only been talking about this game for about, I don't know, maybe 9 or 10 minutes. But just like everything in the game, it's efficient and to the point and what it needs to be. I cannot speak highly enough about this game. I think it's a great game for beginners, and it's a great game for gamers.
Yeah, the components are good. You know, the wooden Bob is good. The all the art is really pretty. It's printed really well. I mean, like, the only component I can think of where it's like, I wish this was, you know, maybe something better is when you complete painting features, you put this like little yellow chit down or a little whatever your color is. And, you know, it's like, could that have been something better? Maybe. I don't know.
I think it is what it is. It's like completely functional. I think it's great.
But yeah, like the components are just solid enough that I was like, yeah, no, this is good. It comes with a little easel. It's like, that's good. Like, I can't think of anything off on anything in it. You know, it's like it does what it sets out to do. It's a short, easy to pick up, like kind of Euro style game, and it just sort of hits all its numbers, and it's not trying to be anything that it's not, you know. No. It is what it is.
Abstracted as it is, it actually does a very good job of tapping into the theme.
Yeah, it does. Well, I mean, like any Euro, I think you could strip the theme off of it and call it something else and it'd probably work, but like every component, you know, is everything from Bob. You know, the cards have Bob quotes on them, and it uses the colors, and it uses all the brushes he uses. Playing the game, I could think of some expansion material, because I was watching a show the other day when we were playing it, where he's like, you know, it's like, oh, you know, you can use any brush you want. Like, you know, you could use a 1-inch brush, but today I'm just going to use the corner of the 2-inch brush, but do whatever makes you happy. And I'm like, that could totally be a card in the future, you know? It's like, you can use, you know, one brush instead of the other. And the little quote could be, it's like, just do whatever makes you happy. And it would be perfect, you know? And it's like, oh, please make an expansion for this with more Bob quotes. It'd be amazing. Just do whatever makes you happy. And if they work in, there's no mistakes. There's just happy accidents somehow. Like, yeah, like, what if you could do that and play a different color for a color? There's no mistakes. There's just happy accidents. Yeah, of course you can put green instead of yellow. The game's perfect. And I can think of things for expansions, but it, like, doesn't need them, you know? It doesn't feel incomplete. It's just great. Like, I can't think of anything bad to say about the game. It was just fun.
Yeah, exactly. I love this game. I think it's fantastic. And you'd be hard-pressed to find more game and more fun for your money.
Yeah, especially because, you know, they won the Target Lotto, so they, you know, the game is relatively inexpensive for what you get. It's $25, and you get, it feels like if that was a more, like, hobby store release, it'd probably be, like, closer to 30 to 35 even. So, yeah. And here's the best part. I don't know about you, Jonathan. I played this game with two players, and I played it with four, actually, and it works.
Oh, yeah. No, it works at any player count. It's phenomenal that way.
Yeah, because so many games say, oh, you could totally play this game with two players, and it's a filthy, filthy lie most of the time, you know? It's like, no, you really need three players to play this game, or more. But no, two players, it works. It's a good... You know, it's a good game, and every game I've played of it's been pretty tight. You know, everybody's kind of close to each other.
There's always a way to get points.
I don't know. I don't know what else to say about this game. It hits everything that it needs to hit.
Just like Bob, I don't think there's anything more that we need to say. I think that this game is fun and amazing, and go get it.
I want to see the end cap again. I want to walk into my Target and see the end cap with the Bob Chia Pet and the Bob Puzzles and the Bob Game and just all this Bob and the Bob Funko Pop. They're making a new one. There's a Bob Funko now holding a brush. Just Bob stuff. Bob makes me happy. I love Bob Ross.
Me too. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of another episode of the Forgot My Dice podcast. Once again, join us on all of our digital domains. We'd love to hear from you. A lot of new additions to the Facebook page recently. Welcome to all of you. And as always, Robert, unless there is something else we need to discuss here, any final thoughts?
It's weird. Like, you know, I lived in SoCal. I moved to Texas. And now I'm up in Portland. And I'm seeing running water everywhere, and it's really weird. And I don't know how to describe it. It's just, it's odd.
You know
odd.
Why that mountain that we were talking about earlier seems so big, too? It's because there's no geography out here. It's something I noticed when I first moved out here. Like, the sky was physically bigger here.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, there's mountains
there's no
everywhere.
There's nothing there's tall trees. Sight.
Yeah, but, man, just there's just the sound of running. Every time I go outside... I hear running water and it doesn't go away. Like in SoCal, it goes away and Texas, you know, it rains and then it's like, oh, hey, we have a creek and it's gone. But no, there's this little creek out behind my place and it just flows every day.
Portland is lucky to have you. If you happen to be in Portland or in Austin, always make sure to give us a holler because we'll gladly come and play a game with you. But beyond that, Robert.
Anything else? No, just the water, man. The water's weird. So much water and rain.
Well,
it rains like every day. It rains every day, Jonathan.
And here's the problem.
It's not Texas rain, you know? Like Texas rain,
it's just the drizzle. It's just the slow drizzle of the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, Texas rain is offensive, you know? Like I remember the first Texas rainstorm.
Texas
I was
rain
driving
is a deluge.
Yeah, I was driving down the road and I'm like, "What is that over there? Is that mist we're driving into?"
No,
it looks
it's just
weird.
A wall of water. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, it's like Matrix Revolution sized drops of just anger pouring down on you. And here it's just like a drizzle. Like I was looking at the average rainfall. It's not actually that much more than Texas.
No, but
you know,
it's
more.
Comes in a different way.
It comes in a different way. It comes out of the spritz bottle from the sky. You know, it's just like, oh, this is refreshing. I like it though. It's different. It's fun.
Well, that brings us to the end of another sleep-deprived episode of the Forgot My Dice podcast. I don't know about you, Rob, but I'm exhausted.
There's a volcano out here. It's like Mount Doom.
You're in an active
No, it's more like Erebor. It's more like the Lonely Mountain. It's weird. I like it.
Well, then, until the Eye of Sauron falls upon you, Robert.
Smog, man. Smog. It's Erebor. Come on, man. Come on, man.
Party on, Robert.
Party on, Jonathan.
The music you heard in this podcast was Intro by Elephiel and Retro Funk by Persephone, both used with permission via the Creative Commons license.